Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
And we welcome you to this edition of Tuesday People, the podcast. I am your host, Mitch Album. I'm the author of the book, Tuesdays with Maury, upon which this podcast is inspired. Lisa Goetsch is alongside, as always, my friend and producer of the program. And we're coming to you now at an unusual time. Since we last spoke with you, I've had a bit of an adventure, not one that I would recommend in any way. But as many of you know, I go to Haiti every month for an orphanage that I operate there called the Have Faith Haiti Orphanage. And we have 60 kids and 40 staff members there that we take care of. And we often go down with guests to help us out. And in this particular trip, we had 8 people with us, including an artist from Seattle and a child psychologist from California, and a master builder from Florida, a plant manager from Canada, a van designer from France.
Wow.
Kind of sounded very international, yeah. The mother of one of our staff members and a couple of childcare workers who are on our staff. And shortly after we got to Haiti, if you've been following the news, this is no surprise, there was a outbreak of violence by the gangs that control almost all of the Port-au-Prince, the capital city where we're located. And it's always violent, but it was really bad. And they freed all these prisoners from a jail. They broke them out of a jail, 4,000 prisoners. They started lighting police stations on fire and killing people in the streets and burning every government building they could get to. And within a matter of hours, the airport was taken over by the gangs. And that was the end of flights going in and out. And the same thing happened with the ports. So there were no boats going in or out. And the roads are already shut off by the gangs. And the borders with the Dominican Republic, which is on the other side of the island, have been closed for a long time. So literally, there was no way out. And this was not, I mean, certainly not welcome news to me, but for our guests in particular, who just came down to help out in an orphanage, you can kind of imagine, wait a minute, what's going on? What do you mean we can't go home?
Was it the first time for them to be there?
Three or four of them was the first time in Haiti, and one of them was their first time ever out of the country.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that there's not going to be another overseas trip for a while. So it became, you know, rather tense for a good stretch of the while there while we were trying to figure out, you know, what to do. And what we could do. And it became apparent that there wasn't much to be done. We didn't have any help really from the embassy. I don't know if they were capable of helping us or not, but they weren't and they didn't. And then eventually one day we found out the embassy staff had left. They had evacuated in the middle of the night. And so we really realized at that point we were on our own. And if we were going to get out, we were going to have to do it some way that we could find our own way. Now, you know, we're just me and my wife, Janine. We go there every month. We might have just stayed and tried to tough it out, you know, for however long it was, stay with the kids and you know, just sort of manage things from there, because obviously it's a very violent time and you're concerned about our property and our kids and our safety and all that. But in this case, we had 8 other people that we were responsible for, and we needed to make sure that they got home safely. We were the ones who asked them to come. So that began a very intense stretch of days where I explored different ways of trying to get out through little side channels. At one point, we thought we had a helicopter lined up to take us out in the wee hours of the morning, a relief helicopter that was going to pick up a pilot and then had gotten permission to fly from the northern city of Cap Haitien down to Port-au-Prince and then back again. We were going to jump on it and get up there and then try to get from Cap Haitien up to the Turks and Caicos, which is a, you know, an independent island, and from there try to work our way home. And we actually left about 6 o'clock in the morning, and we're in these cars. It was a very clandestine operation and this undisclosed site out of hillside. And at one point ran up to this hill with our bags. You know, we each had one little bag apiece, and we're standing on this giant hillside in the middle of Port-au-Prince, you know, just wide open, waiting for this helicopter to come, and it never came. We waited there for like 45 minutes to an hour, and it never came. And
finally,
we got a message from somebody that they can't fly. You know, it's not coming. Not going to happen. And that seemed like our last resort. That was about the last thing that anybody had even heard of that might fly.
That's like a movie. I mean, it's literally like you were in a movie.
Well, yes and no. I mean, I don't want it to sound too much like a movie, because I don't want people to think, oh, how exciting an international event.
No, I don't even mean exciting. I just mean like it's such a, that must have been so frightening. And it's, and like to be standing there in this place where you probably didn't even really know where you were, right?
No, we've never been there before. And, you know, you're kind of exposed out there on a hillside.
Yeah.
You know, with gangs out there shooting, you know, at anything. You don't know, especially if a helicopter were to try to land. So at that point, we raced back to the orphanage. And interestingly, when we went back to the orphanage, the kids who had heard that we had left early in the morning, they didn't really get a chance to see us, they saw that we came back, and they were so sympathetic. They were like, oh, we're so sorry you didn't get out. We know you needed to get out. We're so sorry.
Aww.
I mean, these are kids who can never get out, you know?
Right.
You know, if we stuffed a helicopter with every single one of them, they'd never be allowed to land anywhere, because the Dominican Republic would send them right back over the border. They're not welcome in any of the other islands. They can't land anywhere. I mean, they're people. They're an unwanted people, and they can't come to America. Nothing. And so, it was amazing to me that here they were telling us that they felt sorry for us, that we didn't get out, and they felt bad for us. So we tried several other attempts that didn't work. And then ultimately, we got in touch with a U.S. congressman named Corey Mills, who is a former combat veteran and kind of, you know, very brave survivor of Iraq and Afghanistan, where he fought and survived war wounds and things like that. And he's a pretty tough individual, and he's a congressman. And he has led rescue missions out of Afghanistan and Israel most recently. When the government says they're not going to do anything, he jumps in and does something. And between him and a woman named Lisa McLean, who was another congressperson local here, they put together an effort to try to come get us. And the first night, you know, we coordinated this whole thing. A helicopter was going to come down from the States. It was going to go to two different islands in the Caribbean, gas up, and then finally come in and get us at like 4 o'clock in the morning. And they were going to land at our actual orphanage. And as the night went on and it got later and later, and they got delayed and their generator broke and there were problems, and you know, they were getting later and later, it was looking like they weren't going to get there till 6 o'clock, 6:30. And I had a very difficult decision to make, because we had anxious people who wanted to go home and an anxious, you know, helicopter rescue operation that wanted to come get us. But I had to worry about an orphanage and say, you know, well, what if people see this thing, it's going to be light outside. People see a helicopter coming and landing in our orphanage. You know, they're going to start spreading rumors, or they're going to start filming it and put it out over the internet. And who knows, once they attach film to something, they could think like we were trying to sneak the prime minister in or something like that, because he was out of the country and the gangs didn't want him to get back in the country. And I said, I can't do that to our kids. I can't put our orphanage at risk. And I told them at 4:30 in the morning, when they were about to lift off to come get us, I said, forget it. Don't come. And they were very upset, because understandably they'd worked 24 hours to get there.
Yeah.
And they said, don't come. You know, we moved heaven and earth. I said, please just come tomorrow night. No, you can't. We can't wait till tomorrow night. It's too dangerous. You're not going to, you know, things are going to happen. And I said, we'll survive. We know where the danger is here. We'll still be here tomorrow night, but I can't risk our kids. And, you know, tomorrow night you could come in the thick of night and nobody will see you. So eventually they relented, and thank goodness. That was a really tough stretch of time because my stomach was in knots. My head was in
it. Oh, I bet.
Because it's like, I can't do this to our orphanage. I know everybody here wants to get out, but I can't do it. I can't risk it. And then I had to tell everybody they're not going to come tonight, you know. And fortunately, you know, we have a great group of people, and they understood. Once they understood that it was a risk to the kids, they said, well, we're not going to do anything to risk the kids. So the next night, we were able to locate a different location so that they wouldn't come to our orphanage. And we found this location, and we went there while it was still light outside, because you can't travel once it's dark because of the curfews. And we went there and we just waited there. And of course, we were waiting there like 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock, and they were going to come at 3 o'clock in the morning. Well,
whoa,
we can't. It's hard to stay up till 3 o'clock in the morning.
Were you sitting in a car or outside? Or
we were in this location, you know, which okay. I'm not going to share. But we were in a location. There were chairs and tables, and it was fine. But it was hot, very hot, and everybody was kind of exhausted. And so we just said, all right, let's set our alarms till 2 a.m. And at 2 a.m., we'll all get up, and we'll get our – we had one bag apiece they told us we could bring, and we'll be ready to go. And we were going to go, I think, in two shifts. They were going to take one, you know, group of seven, and then the other group of three. So I lay my head down with Janine, you know, and it's the first time I've tried to even sleep in 2 days. And I was so exhausted, I guess it just conked right out. And my phone was pinging, I guess, while I was sleeping. But, you know, it wasn't the alarm. It was just that ping of a message. And Janine finally shakes me and she says, your phone's been pinging. Your phone's pinging. And so I look at it and the message says, are you getting these messages? With an exclamation point. And I said, you know, what messages? And I look back and they're like four previous messages. We're coming early. Be ready in 30 minutes. Be ready in 20 minutes. Be ready in 10 minutes.
Oh, my goodness.
And so I looked at the 10-minute one, and it was like 6 minutes ago. And so I quickly sent the message back. Yes, got the message. And then I started screaming, everybody, get up, get up, get up, get up. And then I get a ping, no bags, just passports. And apparently they had changed their mind. They got a different helicopter, and they it was too risky to take two trips. They just weren't going to take one, and that was it. So we had to all leave our stuff. Everybody like had to dig through their bags, find their passport, leave their stuff, throw their shoes on, and run out the door. And we flicked the lights to this place so that they could see us. And it came in, you know, following the lights. It landed, you know, just like in a movie, you know, blah, 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 you know, a helicopter, you know.
Yeah.
Going around. And they landed. A guy jumped out and said, let's go, go. And everybody started running. And we just piled this helicopter. No seats, just on top of one another, you know, and 67 seconds it took from the time it landed to the time it lifted off, and we were back up in the air. And
oh my gosh. Then everybody held
their breath because they didn't want to get shot at by a gang, you know. And for about 20 minutes, everybody was, you know, nervous that somebody would see us or whatever. And then eventually we were out of Haiti airspace and we landed, and it was quite an ordeal when we landed. We landed in this very isolated place, and we had to sit there for hours out with a bunch of mosquitoes just waiting to see if we could get a car. And then we got a van, and then we had to drive 4 hours through the countryside to try to get to an airport. But we were out, you know, and we were safe. So, and eventually, I don't know, 20 hours later, we got back to America.
We'll be back with more Tuesday People right after this.
Hey there, I'm Dylan Lewis, one of the hosts of Motley Fool Money. Each weekday on Motley Fool Money, we talk through the business news you need to know and the stories moving stocks on Wall Street. On weekends, we dive into the industries shaping tomorrow and host the experts, authors, and executives that understand them. Tune in for insights, a long-term perspective on investing, and of course, stock ideas, plenty of them. To quote a listener, it pays to listen. Check us out and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
Ladies and gentlemen.
What are you doing?
What do you mean?
I'm making just keep it simple.
I'm making the promo.
Just keep it simple. Just say, hey, we're the Brav Bros, two guys that talk about Bravo.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, we're the Brav Bros.
No.
Oh.
Dude, Stop with the voice. Just keep it simple.
I've seen promos on TV, dude. This is how you get the fans engaged. This is how you get listeners. We're trying to get listeners here. If we just say, oh, we're two dudes that talk about Bravo, people are going to get tired of it already. We need some oomph.
All right, then fine. Let's try to do it with your voice.
Bravo Bros.
Good job.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510 is declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
So it was an interesting ordeal. It was heartbreaking because we had to leave our kids behind. But it was also very instructive. And what I'd like to share with you here is that, you know, and I tried to look through my conversations with Maury to see if we ever really discussed this, and we really didn't, which goes to show you, since Maury and I discussed almost everything, that this is something we truly take for granted, and that is freedom. The freedom to move about wherever you wish to go. And when you have that taken away from you, you kind of go through the five stages of grief. You know, you first denial, like, what do you mean? You know, they can't tell us we can't leave. They can't shut the airport. And then anger, like, you know, how could they do this? You know, and then despair, and then, you know, grieving or mourning, and then acceptance. Ultimately, at the end, like, what are we going to do? There's nothing we can do. And it's a terrible sinking feeling to get up each day and not be able to move and not be able to go anywhere. Now, I bring this up because this is how people in Haiti live all the time. They're not allowed to go anywhere. They're not welcome to fly out anywhere. They can't get visas to go almost any country in the world, won't accept them. And that's if they could even get a passport, which you can't get a passport. So imagine living a life of poverty or danger or violence and saying, I'm willing to leave, but I can't leave. They won't let me leave. Some powers that be won't let me go. Wow. It's an incredible feeling, and one that I hope to never repeat, but I also hope to never forget, because you start yearning to just be free. You know, you don't want anything else but just to be free. And really, so much of the world is separated between those who are free and those who are not free. The rest might be politics, might be ideology, might be, you know, religion, might be the way that people look at the world. But if you don't like it someplace, you can leave. You can go. But think of the places where you can't. You can't just pick up and go from Russia. You can't just pick up and go from China.
Yeah.
You can't just pick up and go from Sudan or other places where it's so dangerous you can't get out. And those kinds of places, and that's what Haiti has become right now, a trap. You feel in prison. Somebody called it an open air prison. And, you know, because you can step outside, but you can't go anywhere. And it was really a very illuminating feeling for all of us to not be permitted to move. And to, you know, just get up each day and say, can we go anywhere? No, we can't. Can we leave? No. Can we go home? No, you can't go home. You can call home. You can, you know, talk to home, but you can't go home. And I don't know how to encourage people to appreciate that freedom, because, like I said, even Maury and I never spoke about it because we take it so much for granted. It's so built into our American life that, you know, we don't think about what if somebody were to stop us from going anywhere. We had a bit of a taste of it with COVID. You saw how people got
angry, they got,
you know,
yeah, They were horrible. That was just like, you can't eat your favorite restaurant and people were going crazy, you know?
Exactly.
They would never be able to handle it, you know?
Yeah.
And it's really, you know, even with 9/11 for us, it gave us a slight taste of what it's like to feel that danger and to wonder what's around the next corner. And this is something these people live with every single day. And even when you say it's like an open air prison, I'm assuming that most of these people can't even go into the open air, you know, because it's too dangerous to step outside. So think about that.
Streets every night. Our kids, you know, do their nightly prayers and you can hear gunfire while they're doing their prayers. The juxtaposition is horrifying. And our kids haven't been out of the orphanage in 3 years.
Is the fighting going on around where you were?
Yeah.
So it was like immediately like in that neighborhood too.
Yeah. They were burning and shooting whatever less than a half a mile from our place, and continues to go on. And so now we find ourselves so torn between, you know, having left and yet our kids are still there and knowing that we couldn't take our kids out even if we wanted to. Thank goodness little baby Nadi, who is Haitian, you know, has a Haitian passport still. If we had taken her with us on this trip, as we have done in the past, she wouldn't have been able to come home with us.
I wondered about that. I wondered if she was with you. I didn't know that she wasn't.
They wouldn't have let us bring her into the Dominican Republic because
wow,
allow Haitians to come in. So it was really an eye-opening lesson and a very, 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 very illuminating one in terms of appreciation of things that you have or don't have. And you know, I don't really know how to tell you how to appreciate freedom, except that, you know, one day without it feels like somebody's choking you and you can't breathe and your whole thought process is different when you don't have the option to go. And so think about that and think about how, like right now, if there's crime in your city, all right, this big going on right now in America, you know, homelessness, crime, influx of immigrants that are bringing with it problems or whatever, you can always just take a plane and go to another state. If you really are bothered by it, you can take a train and go across to Canada or to Mexico. You can fly to another country. You can get away from it. So we complain about things. Oh, this is dangerous. But we have options if we ultimately really had to do it. I mean, nobody wants to pick up and move, obviously, but we do have that option. When you don't have the option to go anywhere, when you are stuck in place and you are waiting for terror that might get closer to you and get closer to you, there is very little that compares to that in this world. Yeah. And we need to not only appreciate our own freedom, but we need to understand that, in my opinion, and this is where I know Maury would agree with me, the need to help people in situations who don't have that option. It's not as simple as saying, well, what do we need to get involved in another stupid country for? It's about basic human rights, the basic human right to be able to go out of your home or be able to leave a place if you want to leave a place. Nobody should have to be without that. And the people who have it should stand up for the people who don't have it and should step forward to do something about it. And, you know, right now we're not really doing a whole lot. I mean, we're sending money and we're trying to coax other parties to get involved and take a stand, but we're not. We are being America, which is disappointing to me because Haiti is right off of our shores.
Yeah.
Haiti's our neighbor. It's our backyard. We occupied Haiti for nearly 20 years in the 1900s. We helped write their constitution. We had their money in our banks. We have a history there. And they are looking to us, have been looking to us to help them come in, you know, help us send a force, get rid of these gangs. It's not any huge challenge for an American military force. They could take care of these gangs in no time. I mean, they're no match for them. These are just, you know, bad men with guns, but they're not an army.
Yeah.
But we don't want to get involved and we don't want to put any boots on the ground. And so, you know, there's only so much you can do sending money and trying to advise things, you know, and it doesn't, money ends up in the wrong hands and the advice is ignored. So, you know, we need to think about people who are, do not have the freedom that we do, and we need to cherish that, what we do. So I want to thank everybody through our show who sent amazing, kind messages of concern while we were down there, of hope, financial support. You know, we need a ton of it because we have to buy so much stuff to protect ourselves, and we have to load up on fuel, load up on water and food, because something's bad is very, you know, it's coming very soon, and it's quite possible we're going to be locked down, no markets, no place to go for anything. And all that, of course, takes a lot of money because they're raising the prices to, you know, blackmail everybody because they can. And so it's gouging. But people who sent money to havefaithhaiti.org, or people who wrote me, or people who expressed through Lisa, you know, please tell Mitch that we hope he's okay. We appreciate it greatly. It helped us a lot while we were gone, and it helps us even still. And now please turn that same good affection and good attention to the children and our staff who are still there, and pray that we can somehow find a way to protect them or to get them out.
Yeah. And thank you, Mitch, for all you're doing, because, you know, you're doing what people should do, you know, and we need more Mitches in the world. Well, and Janine's.
Yeah. I don't know about any of that. I just know.
But it's the truth. You know, you're stepping in where most people don't want anything to do. So thank you.
So that'll do it for an unusual little session. I know people were anxious to hear the story. And so even though I'm kind of decompressing from coming back, I did want to at least come on and share it with you, and share my thanks and my appreciation. If you want to continue to support our orphanage at havefaithhaiti.org, please do. We'll be back next week, hopefully with a more normal version of this. Lisa Goich produces a program, We Tuesday People, on the web, wetuesdaypeople.com. Until we get a chance to see you again, Mitch Albom saying, see you next Tuesday.
Thank you for listening to Tuesday People. To be part of our conversation, join the Tuesday People community at wetuesdaypeople.com. Subscribe to our podcast so you don't miss an episode, and share it with your friends. We look forward to having you with us every Tuesday because, after all, we're Tuesday people.